Colonel Mason, Reel 4. You're describing the Royal Review of Troops and at Delhi, and you had just mentioned your brigadier.
Yes, was I? Well, brigadier was leading our formation. We were going so fast that he couldn't pull his horse up. So we had to disregard him altogether when it came back, and it came to turning back into line again. And then it finished up, of course, with the whole line advancing towards the grandstand to take the salute of the sovereign. Yes. With the band all playing, that was lovely. Yes. What I was so fortunate was that my horse was considered to be too wild, too trusted to, you know, to keep back. So it was. A party of men were detailed at about 10 yards interval in front of the stand, the whole length of the stand, and I was in the centre, one of those in the centre. So I saw the whole thing, just like the king did. Yes, that's wonderful.
What other events happened during those 14 days?
Yes, of course. Well, there was any amount of all the mounted sports were on. For instance, with the cavalry, there was men at arms and fencing. With the infantry, there was bayonet fighting. Football, hockey. All the native regiments, of course, were raiding on hockey and football. Well, that took a long time. And of course, what concerned our regiment most was the polo championship of the Durbar. And my regiment, of course, who won the interregimental championship 6 years of succession, thought they were tops. But they were unfortunately beaten in the first round by the King's Dragoon Guards. And the language was shocking, apparently. Oh, so it was great disappointment.
Did you in the regiment always have the same horse, or were you just sort of issued a different horse for each particular event of that?
Normally you kept your own horse once you when you started, of course, going to riding school, you kept your own horse to go to riding school, and after that, of course, you allotted one in the troop. But as casualties occurred, as men went sick or went home. You change horses, or we'll give them a change. Normally the idea was to give a man a horse and let him keep it as long as he could. Until either horse changed or the man changed.
What was the weather like during the Durbar?
Oh, lovely, beautiful, fine, yes. Sunshine every day. Yes.
Did these activities take place at high noon or in the morning or the evening?
All day, yes. Morning and afternoon, yes. Morning and afternoon, yes.
And it was?
It was, of course, enormous amount of ground. Various camps. Enormous amount of ground, but of course, flat as a pancake. And there was no limit to it. They could go as fast as they wanted. All these grounds were all marked out. It was very well organized, of course. Football grounds are marked out, men-at-arms course all marked out, hockey grounds marked out, and everything. And to cater for all that kind of thing, yes.
Somebody must have organised all that. There must have been sort of an overall
yes.
commander.
That's right, yes. So the commander-in-chief, of course, and his staff, and the viceroy and his staff. It was, I think, a combined affair. It would have been a combined affair between the two to organise a committee. To run all that out. But, of course, Durbars and reviews kind of in India at that time were happened every year, and it was a normal thing. You see. They had the plans, that kind of thing. It was just a matter of a bigger one than usual.
Did you have, as these things were happening all day, did you have extra water ration, water issue? Because it would be so hot and you'd be in full dress.
No, we got used to that. Yes, after all, you go from breakfast to lunchtime without a drink. if it needs be, on a big parade. Of course, in barracks, you go, there was always a break. At midday, you came in off parade, and before you went out to stables, you could get a drink. If there's any big day, like regimental drill, that kind of thing, on corner planes, well, you'd go the whole morning. You'd go from having your breakfast at 7 until you got back at 1 o'clock. That was no hardship. Of course, by the time you did get back, your thirst would take quite a lot of slake in you. With the chap of the beer drinker, took a few pints. And with the tea drinkers, took a few, several cups of tea. Yeah.
Was there any hint? I presume that your job is escort, was purely ceremonial. Was there any hint that, as if there is such an event today, that the king might be assassinated? Were they on the lookout for this sort of activity?
I don't know. I don't think so. And the thing is that they were always guarded, you see. The royal camp where they stayed had a guard on it. Royal guard. A regiment. And wherever they moved, it was a royal escort. Yes. Wherever they went. But I don't think there was any... I never heard of any fear of assassination on those days. I think there weren't so many mad fools about then as well.
Was there any form of royal address of thanks to the troops in India for?
Oh yes, that was published. That was published in sort of army orders. Yes. Coming on the top, the king and queen, or the emperor and empress, however they like to put it, was highly impressed with the excellent performance of the troops, that kind of thing. And they like to convey their thanks to all ranks. That was published in army orders. Yes. And there was a publication, the Times of India, I think, which is still run, the Times of India. They issued a special issue of the Durbar, a great thick one. Would you like to see one? I've got it.
Yes. From India, you went to South Africa.
Yes.
The 10th Hussars went. Was it unusual for a regiment to be to have another overseas posting instead of returning home?
It was routine, which I think is was decided on, because India was very severe on a man's health in those days, and they didn't have the medicaments or the cures or the treatment for malaria and the typhoid, and all, which they've got today. So. Cases were pretty high, sickness were pretty high, and with the result that after 6 or 7 years, or 5 or 6 years, which a man would normally be out there, really, your health rather went down. Something. So the idea was that coming back post-regiment from there to Africa, because Africa had been very, very healthy. By the time they got back to England, they were really fit men again. That was the idea of it. That's why it was that purpose. You went from England to India, India, Africa, Africa home. Yeah. That was the cavalry. And it worked pretty well. You hadn't been in Africa 6 months before you were fine again. Fit for anything.
How did the regiment come to not exactly be involved in the miners' strike, but they played a part in the was there rioting
we were only 90 miles from Johannesburg, you see, a place called Potchefstroom, and we had two regiments there, a batch of artillery. So I think we were about the nearest. There was another who was infantry at Victoria. I don't know whether they were cordoned or not. But this was a very bitter strike. And they were white miners.
Gold miners,
yes. Very, in those days, yes. It was very bitter. And the police were frightened that it was going to be too much for them. It was getting too much for them. So they called in the military, which, of course, I think, which happened in England, too. You come to think, I mean, between... I've got the history here of the 13th, of the 18th Hussars. Twice in between 1902 and 1914, they were on strike duty. Yes. And it was a normal thing. It was, police couldn't cope, but they called in the military. And the strike was over in no time. So that's why we were called in, is because the police thought it would be too much of it. It nearly was. And the reason the rioters, they were trying to burning down and breaking up shops, and smashing windows, and doing frightful damage. And the police, of course, chasing them. There were not so many cars by those days, there are now. And communication and supervision was more difficult. But we, with our horses, you see, were mobile, and that was a big help. I think we stopped them burning down the Rand Club. The writers, the Rand Club being in the centre of Johannesburg. And the place which the miners looked upon as the mine owners' mecca sort of thing, were they? And they thought, burn that down, we'll get some home back anyway. we were, first of all, of course, they thought they had to protect each mine. We were posted out along the mines, one squad in each mine. But the Royal Dragoons, our other regiment in Potsdam, they were on duty in Johannesburg itself. And in the morning, they'd riots had got very, very nasty. And one young officer, it went by accident or intent, but he gave the order to fire, and some miners were killed. Well, that raised hell with the miners. And so they pulled the royals out and put us in. We galloped in from the mines, and in no time we were in Johannesburg, relieved the royals at in the Rand Square, the square outside the Rand Club. We had a nasty time. The rioters, they couldn't do anything with us because we were quite strong. All the streets were square for us. And you were four squadrons in the centre. One squadron, one troop faced each way. So one troop marched up and came back. And as they came back, the other one marched up and came back. So the rioters and the battle were kept at a respectful distance. But that was only on the roads. We didn't chase them off the pavements. And we didn't stop them shouting. They swore and cursed us and blast us to hell, that kind of thing. We didn't take any notice. Just let them cool down. They thought, well, they're about to stop sometime when it comes dark. But an exciting week, where the strike lasted. Then we stayed up there for a month. We went into camp in a part called Auckland Park. And that was very pleasant. Lovely weather, fine weather, good food. And when it was all over, they gave us a strike pay. Privates got a shilling a day, Lance Corporals got 1 and 3. I think you finished up with the Sergeant Major getting about half a crown a day for 30 days. Oh, very acceptable, because wages now pays very low, and that's very low. And of course, everything's very dear. Even in those days, there was no pence in South Africa. The lowest English coin was a threepenny bit, which you call a ticket, no pence.
What was it called?
Ticket.
The ticket?
Yeah, ticket, threepenny bit, ticket. yes. So, there was no, not much chance for us to go out into town. Our money wouldn't go anywhere at all. Spend our money mostly with the what they call the SAGI, the SAGI, as they call it, the South African Guidance Institute, from which the NAFI was formed.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. The funders of the SAGI, when that was closed out, when the garrison left Africa, was the nucleus in which the NAFI was started. Yeah. It used to be the Navy and Army Canteen Board. That was the first thing, Navy and Army Canteen Board. And then the whole lot were then integrated, the Air Force as well, and then it became the NAFI, Navy, Army and Air Force Institute.
South Africa at that time, I can't recall. Was South Africa a dominion? She didn't
yes,
have her.
Yes.
Did she have her own forces as well as the British Army there? Or would they be sort of militia type forces?
They must have been. Must have been some. I never saw any. And don't know where they were. There must have been some kind of reserve, I think, probably like a territorial army. Because when the war broke out and the British guys were withdrawn, Smuts, of course, had an army.
Yes.
Or there was an army got for him from South Africa, which worked up through Western Africa and finished up, of course, in Tripoli, in Egypt.